This is the Red Cloud? It's not some third-rate cousin or something like that? He's the one that points and tells above all the Sioux?
Right. I sipped at the coffee and stared at the ground.
What's he doing out of here?
Jack reached over, picked up my full plate, and set it next to his coffee. She says they're coming back from a medicine lodge. I reckon from the kid being sick. According to her, he travels this way all the time. It's his country. He can go where he wants. Who'd ever recognize him in that ragged getup?
So, every Indian in the world is hunting him right now?
Yep. The Sioux are looking for them because they've been missing over a week, and the Shoshone are real eager to lift Red Cloud up on a spear and claim the reward. Bone says there's a railroad man offering a handsome reward for whoever kills him.
How much reward?
Forget it. We ain't bounty hunters.
I'm just curious how much money we ain't going to collect for not turning him in. Old Bone seemed real disappointed not getting to kill him this morning. Reckon it's just the reward money?
I don't know. Why?
Don't trust Bone.
Same here. Big Shod and Ben Bone walked up from across the front of the herd.
He's lost a lot of blood, but I think he's gonna live.
The boy?
His fever's breaking. I'm certain he'll be fine by morning.
Good. Surely if Red Cloud's bunch shows up, they'll cut us some slack for saving him and his grandson.
Well, that depends on who shows up. Right now, there's four war chiefs under Red Cloud. There's Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, Gall, and Standing Bear. Horse, Bull, and Gall are loyal to Red Cloud, but Bear would cut his own mother's throat if it made him chief of all the Sioux. If we run into his bunch, we're in trouble. He might even want to kill him and lay it on us.
Always politics.
And Bone, you're wanting to kill Cloud and get the reward.
If we're gonna get blamed, we just as well get something for it.
There's no reward for Red Cloud. Where'd you hear such a thing?
Oh, by God, there is too. I heard there's a railroad man from Kansas City offering...
That's insane. That's also illegal.
That's the damn truth. Now I say kill him and see if we ain't offered a reward.
Makes sense, don't it, Jack? Shot? They just nodded to go along with me.
Oh, then I can kill him?
Nah, I reckon not.
Damn it! See about my luck.
One more thing. I don't know why you're so anxious to see him dead, but if something happens to him because of you, or that lop-eared boy of yours, I'll kill you so quick you'll think you died yesterday. Entering the small cave just beside our fire, I saw the Indian woman. She sat pressing a damp piece of cloth to the boy's head. Next to the boy, Red Cloud lay covered by two saddle blankets. His breathing was near to normal. He was still unconscious.
I don't know what to do about you folks.
She stood slowly, smoothing the front of her doe-skin dress.
I cannot say. Only my father can give you your freedom.
Her hands worked as if painting a picture of each word.
Wait a minute. Maybe you don't understand. We're not the prisoners here. Y'all are.
Prisoners? You have many horses, few warriors. We have many warriors and horses. You come on our land, take horses to our enemies. Buffalo Man kill Shoshone War Chief, Two Hand. Now, Shoshone kill you. My people kill you.
Her hands clasped together.
Prisoner?
When she'd clasped her hands together, I felt like my nuts had been smashed between them.
Maybe we can work something out. We did save your son and father's lives, don't forget.
I will speak to my father.
I was stepping back away from her. For some reason, I took off my hat and held it at my chest as I moved backward toward the cave entrance.
I sure thank you, ma'am. I really do.
I stomped from the cave to where Jack stood watch at the front of the herd. I was mad at myself for bowing and scraping with my hat in my hand, and I felt foolish because I didn't even realize I was doing it until I stepped out of the cave.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I'm just negotiating their release.
Uh-huh. She burnt your ass.
I went to my mare and jerked my rifle from the scabbard. I don't understand a damn thing about these crazy people or this crazy country. Kermit's scream came from the other side of the herd.
Up there!
Big Shod pointed to the top edge of the ravine as he dove over a pile of rocks. I jumped behind the rock in front of the cave as another arrow stuck in the hard ground. Jack was already behind the rock, scanning upward through his rifle sights. Kermit lay in the dirt, squeezing his leg. An arrow had struck just above his knee. It stuck out on both sides. Another arrow landed beside him. I saw a Shad appear from behind the rocks. Jack and I fired up the wall of the ravine to cover Kermit and Shad. The horses jumped around, ready to bolt through the rope corral. Ben Bones slid in behind us and pointed toward Kermit. Shad had drugged Kermit behind the rock pile and was tying a tourniquet around his leg.
Sure, see? Same as me. No damn luck.
He couldn't see a damn thing up the ravine wall.
We can't just sit here, Jack. Why no gunfire, Bone?
Young bucks, maybe. Probably a hunting party of young bucks. They wouldn't have rifles yet.
Then I'm riding out of here after them. This is bull.
I'll go too.
No, stay here and keep a lookout. If we're not back soon, light out. Bone, you're coming with me.
No, not with my damn luck.
Fine, I'll go alone. Jack, if I don't come back, stab both his eyes out and cut his legs off.
I'll go. Give me some bullets.
Nope.
When Bone and I left the ravine, we cut sharp and headed back along the ridge.
It's Shoshone.
I glanced around at the arrow we pulled loose from the saddle as we'd made our run. He held it over toward me as we pounded on.
Here's how you can tell.
Cheyenne, Sioux, Shoshone, to hell with them all. Yeah!
Wait! Well, I've got no bullets!
Then you better keep up, damn it!
The four Indians spotted us at 300 yards across the flat grassland. I had my rifle in my hand. I knew it was useless to try a shot from this distance on horseback. I fired to draw them away from Jack and the others below. They slid up on their horses and raced away. We cut right behind them out across the grassland.
If they get away, they'll bring others.
They ain't getting away.
Their horses were fast and with a good lead. We had chased them over a mile when I realized that if we spun out our horses, we could land in a trap. It was the oldest trick in the book. If they could get us to spend our horses in a hard run, all they had to do was have fresh riders waiting on both sides. They would lead us in, then disappear. The other riders would drop from both sides and leave us holding our guts in our hands. That's how we'd done it in the war. It worked. The rifle fire came from the other side of the grassy knoll. I glanced at home.
An army! Now we'll hear about it! Ha ha ha!
Wait!
It might be a trick!
Trick? Hell, there ain't that many Indian rifles in this whole territory!
I mean us! Look beside you, straight ahead!
We reined up hard and slipped over the edge of a low shoulder. I saw a movement in the grass on both sides of us on the road ahead. Now Bone saw it too.
No wonder you've got no luck.
We slipped from our saddles and eased our horses into a shadowed gully. We crawled back to the edge and watched the grass bend as Indians eased back quick and quiet.
You're right. It must be Army rifles. But we were heading to heaven the hard way if we'd gone on. The Army must have spotted it.
Bone stared at me slack-jawed, and I realized that all he knew about Indians was how to backtalk them in their own language. I'd seen enough of Powder River to know the only way to stay alive here was to settle down and start thinking like an Indian. So far, they'd gotten the upper hand on everything the Army threw at them. They must have been doing something right. We crept to the edge of the knoll and looked down. The four Indians had run smack into a cavalry patrol just before trapping us in crossfire. They'd managed to cover behind some rocks near the edge of a dry creek bed, but given the odds, it wouldn't last long. I saw two arrows whistle out from behind the rocks.
Christ, those Shoshone, they're just snot-nosed kids.
Yeah, well, you saw what they done to Kermit. Kill all of them little devils before they grow up and make more.
This is madness.
Draw your weapon!
The demand came from a barrel-chested captain from the center of the line of soldiers. There was a moment's hesitation. Then bows and quivers of arrows came hurling over the rocks and landed in a puff of dust.
Now come out with your hands in the air!
Good. It's over.
These kids would be taken prisoner, but it beat the hell out of dying before their next birthday. I wondered what kind of warriors would use their children to spring a trap. Only the kind that didn't intend to lose. And that's the only kind that don't. Seeing the four of them standing there in front of the mounted soldiers, I was grateful we hadn't gotten close enough to shoot them during our chase. The oldest looked no more than 12. The youngest, maybe 10. They stood there wide-eyed, as if ready to wet themselves. The soldiers laughed. I even grinned myself. I wondered if their daddies would chastise them for getting caught. I just started to stand and yell down to the soldiers. The four kids seemed to fly apart like sugar cookies thrown against a wall. Their blood erupted in a fine red mist, and they flew back against the rocks and melted down like candle wax. I stood, speechless, stricken, my arms spread to my sides. Not even in the war had I seen the likes of this.
Hee-haw! Killed them! Every damned one! Hee-hee!
Bone stepped back as the soldiers turned the rifles in our direction. I still could only stare at the torn and mangled kids.
Identify yourselves.
I turned my face toward the captain slowly. Even at 30 yards, I could see where blood had splashed from the rocks and left dark spots on the soldiers and their horses.
Beatty! James Beatty!
My words sounded thick and distant to me.
He's a damn liar. His name is Miller Crow, and I'm Ben Bone, the man what caught him cold.
How the hell does he know that? I thought. I started to spin around and yank his tongue out. But I felt the back of my head ring and saw the soldiers and horses swirl before me. I felt the tall grass catch me like a mother's arms. I heard everything through a fog.
I tell you, I tracked that some bitch for a week. Thinks he's slick, but I just waited for the right chance.
Bon, you couldn't track Dip if it was on your shoes. This man saved your life back there. We saw him sneak in, that's why we hit him from the other direction.
By God, I'm claiming the reward on him and Red Cloud and any of that bunch that's worth anything.
There's no bounty for Red Cloud, you idiot. That's just some stupid rumor that's been circulating.
Lying on the ground, the world returned to normal. I barely opened my eyes and saw many pairs of boots standing before me. I knew without looking my gun was gone from my holster and my Glades knife from my boot. I feigned unconsciousness and listened.
Doug, you and Dirty Jaw get Crow here on a horse and tie his hands behind him.
He leaned down and lifted my head by my collar.
And I bet you haven't heard a word, have you, Mr. Crow?
Oh, hell, Captain, why can't I just shoot him? I caught him.
Go ahead, it's your style.
Well, I've got no damn bullets. Will you please give me some bullets?
Sorry, got none to spare.
Damn it!
Two pair of moccasins appeared before me. I held my hands behind my back and tied them tight. I saw Bone's boots stomp the ground as he raved.
Why can't I ever get any damn bullets?
Dog rode beside me at the rear of the column while Dirty Jaw scouted ahead.
Maybe Bone's luck will change now that he's caught you.
Dog was a serious sort who would only speak if he looked you in the eye. I'd known Cherokee like him down in the Nations. He knew right away you were talking to a man you could trust. I'll change his luck.
He really has had a run of bad luck.
Without asking, I could tell by looking, Dog wasn't full-blooded Indian. Not from around here, anyway. His cheekbones were not as high set, and his eyes were more green than brown. Dog was a Lower Nations half-breed. They'd lost themselves years ago. Now they'd mixed their blood to survive and picked up enough white to make them crazy, enough Indian to make them wild. They kept it masked, each side from the other.
He had you believing the Sioux kids were Shoshone, huh? Anybody knows the only Shoshone up here are the Braves working for the Army?
Yeah, but that was a cowardly thing, killing them youngins.
Worse than gutting a sheriff in his sleep?
Dog looked me straight in my face. I reckon the news of my killing that sheriff had traveled around the world. You had to be there. At the entrance to the ravine, Dog took out a strip of rawhide and gagged me with it. The column moved forward slowly as if inspecting each rock and drift of dust. When we got to the spot where I should have seen horses, there were no horses, no ropes, and not even a hoof print in the dust. Dog led my horse to the front of the column and jerked the gag from my mouth.
Tell him, damn it, and tell the truth. Tell him you're Miller Crow. Tell him who was here with you.
Bone started to reach for me. I raised a foot to kick his brains out. Dog jumped his horse between ours.
Hold it, Bone. How do you know this is Crow?
Two hands told me, Captain. We was talking Indian between us, and he told me it. And I kept quiet and waited for my chance. Some say he's the horseman for the James gang.
How would Two Hand know?
A feller named Flowers told him. Flowers had been tracking him. Then a big dog bit Flowers' ear off because Flowers kicked it back while they was fighting in Crofton.
Have you been drinking?
Hell no!
He's lying, Captain. Lean over and smell his breath.
No thanks, I can smell it from here.
mouth, damn it! I had a couple of shots of wonderful stuff, but I'm telling you the damn truth.
Did you get it from a couple of drunken cowboys, Kid Cole and Runaround Joe?
He sure did.
That explains it. We have orders to arrest them and get out of here for their own good. Bone, that stuff would cross a billy goat's eyes. And you're not that stable anyway. I believe you slipped the rim.
I'm telling you the truth, Captain. They're here somewhere.
I should go ahead and kill you for putting my column in danger. But I will wait and see what Toohan says about it.
Then you'll be waiting forever, Captain. His black giant partner broke Toohan's in half back at the Powder Crossing.
The Captain silenced it with a cold stare.
Black giant?
I swear, a giant. He's bald and wears little eyeglasses and talks better than a $10 lawyer. He broke him so bad, Toohan's ass was where his belly ought to be.
The Captain squinted and bit his lip.
Dog, if Bone opens his mouth again, put a bullet between his eyes and get him out of his misery.
Dog nodded. Bone's face turned blue and froze.
Were you here earlier with a string of horses, a group of wranglers, Red Cloud, his daughter Stands Alone, and her son? Anybody else?
He shot Bone a look he didn't learn at West Point. Bone shook his head, and his eyes pleaded.
No, sir. I was here with Ben Bone. But that was before I realized he was a drunken lunatic.
Bone turned colors I'd never seen on a living person. He strained and gritted his teeth till spit run down his chin. Dog smiled with his cocked rifle hovering in Bone's face. He smiled even more as he reached out and tweaked Bone's nose with the barrel.
Sergeant, is there any sign of a cave inside the crevice?
No, sir. There's a boulder under there that would take a team of ox to move.
Any minute, Bone would have to let go and fly into another raven fit. I believed it would be his last one. He and I knew how the boulder got there. Big shot.
I see.
The Captain glanced around the upper edges of the ravine. Darkness was closing fast. It seemed to concern him.
Prepare to advance in column of twos. Bone, I've decided not to kill you for some reason, but for your own good, I'm placing you under military arrest. We'll settle this back at the fort. Dog, tie him up and gag him.
But Captain, I swear!
He turned to me as Dog slapped a leather gag around Bone.
I'm gonna ask you one time and one time only. Are you Miller Crow?
No, sir, Captain. I'm Beatty. James Beatty. I'm a horse dealer out of Missouri. I did come up here with a string of horses under the authority of Colonel Carrington, but I lost a bunch of them in quicksand and the rest got stolen. And my wranglers got killed. Now that's the whole of it. I only took up with Bone because he said he knew the country and the Sioux. But as you saw by that ambush that was about to happen back there, he don't know squat.
Bone is just a greedy old bastard. Everybody here knows it. What made you realize you were heading into an ambush back there?
Just common sense, Captain. I'd started pulling up when I heard your rifles.
He considered a second, looking me up and down.
Dog, cut him loose, but watch him.
Captain, can I have my gun?
Yeah, back at the fort.
They'd all disappeared. In the 2 or 3 hours since I'd left, Jack, Shod, Kermit, 80 horses, and the 3 Indians had vanished without a trace, like smoke in a breeze. We rode forward out of the ravine. The Captain was worried. He was too far out for this time of evening. I found some comfort in knowing that he even thought of it at all. Red Cloud's warriors would not trick this man. Not even with their children's lives. He had learned the Indians' ways of war, to kill anything that was a part of the enemy. The High Plains had taught him the art of merciless brutality, and I wondered what his knowledge had cost him, somewhere in the darkness of his military mind. Darkness had sat upon us by the time we'd cleared the ravine and rode half a mile across the grassland. I heard the lonesome call of a nightbird as we rode past grassy knolls and in and out of dark gullies. I tensed in my saddle for just a second, wondering if anybody else knew what it was. Jack was a good hand at staying alive. I knew that Jack had control, but the soldiers didn't recognize the sound, and Dog and Dirty Jaw didn't seem to care. We rode on in the soft clanking of army rigging and the scuffle of the horses' hooves. We arrived quietly at Fort Phil Kearney, just the way I'd imagine I would. Except, instead of leading a string of horses, I rode in between 2 armed soldiers at the rear of an army patrol. Dog reined up beside me as the patrol shuffled through the main gate in a cloud of brown powder.
You carrying any money?
Why are you asking?
Because if you are, don't try offering any bribes to Carrington. He's very strict and by the book. It would only make things harder on you.
Thanks, but I know better than to try and bribe an army officer. I thought about Trap and my lost $100. We reined up near a half-finished livery barn. As I slipped from my saddle beside the two scouts, Dog nodded toward the front of the column and we saw Bone jumping up and down with his arms tied behind him. The young captain said something to the big Irish sergeant. The sergeant's fist snapped out and sent Bone flying backwards.
So much for Bone. If he thinks Mad Johnson won't have him killed just because we're in the fort, he truly is crazy.
Mad Johnson? That's what you call a captain?
If you get to know him, you'll understand why.
After seeing what happened to those Indian kids, I've already got a pretty good idea.
But he knows how to get the job done. You gotta give him that.
If it takes killing half-grown kids, I ain't sure it's worth it.
The Sioux have done just as bad to white children. To hell with them. That's war.
You're Indian, Jaw. How can you feel that way toward your own people?
I got here because my Crow Ma was raped by a Cheyenne warrior before any white man gave a damn about what was going on up here. You have no idea who my people are. My people are whoever pays the best, or the ones who are winning. I'm in the war business, and that's always booming.
Don't try to think too much about anything but staying alive. That's the way Mad Johnson does it. That's why he's the best.
I bet that's the way he got his nickname.
You're learning already.
Could be as long as a year before anybody comes to identify you. With Red Cloud's war going on, only a fool would venture up here unless they had to.
Colonel Henry Carrington leaned back in his desk chair and tapped his chin with a quill pen. He was a finely trimmed little man with sharp eyes and a tightness about his chin. Surely to goodness, you're not going to hold me that long because Ben Bone, a raving maniac, says... Carrington cut me off with a snap of his eyes.
I don't really care if you're Miller Crow. If Kansas City or the state of Missouri has a charge against you, that's their problem. I've got more to deal with. I am concerned that you've been found carrying an army requisition dispatch with my signature forged on it. There was one floating around last year, but once we chased away some grifter and a couple of his outlaw buddies, I thought that would be the end of it.
I thought a mysterious Dave Mathers story and felt my neck heat up. Mather and I were going to have a serious talk if I ever got out of here. For the 15th time, Colonel, we were slickered by a fast talker back in Crofton. He sold me the herd and the requisition. Said if I had the nerve to bring that herd up Powder River, I would make top dollar, I swear!
So you just jumped right in?
Yes, I know it was stupid, but damn it, the paper looked real enough.
An infantry commander ordering 100 saddle horses? I must say it has a certain flair of originality.
80. Most of them stolen by a bunch of outlaws before I made it past the crossing. Two good men dead. Look, how was I supposed to know? Hell, I showed the paper to a Major Trapp in Crofton. He never questioned it. Carrington leaned forward in his chair.
Trapp had the authority to confiscate the horses. But between you and me, I'm glad you took off with them. Trapp doesn't like me, you know. He thinks because I appreciate good, snappy marching music that somehow I'm not competent to command this expedition. Actually, it's more than that, but be that as it may, I just wish you could have brought them up here. We generally only contract with designated horse dealers, but right now I do have two companies of cavalry who are in immediate need of some well-broken saddle horses.
Is that so? Well, maybe I can find them, if you let me out of here.
Huh. I admire your spirit, but those horses are long gone by now. Of course, if you could bring up another string, off the record, I'd buy them.
If I found some. I could be talking over 100 ahead, as risky as it is.
You'll have to talk price with Captain Fetterman. I'm infantry, he's cavalry. So you shot Jip Pope on the 14th, is that correct?
Sounds about right. Why are you asking?
Because the day after you left, the Popes hit our payroll for the third time, 7 miles from Crofton.
Damn! I was that close to the Pope brothers?
I know what you're thinking.
My eyes snapped up at his. I was thinking, if only I'd known, Jack and I could have knocked out that payroll ourselves, and to hell with the horse scheme. This whole bunch was either over my head or twisted deep in my imagination. Either way, I would have settled for the payroll and ran back to Missouri.
You're lucky to be alive. They could have found you, they would have skinned you.
Praise the Lord. But I was thinking that between Jack and me, quick ambush, snatch the money. I shook my head to put it out of my mind. How'd they know where to hit? I thought with the war up here, payroll deposits were top secret.
I personally think they're getting inside information. We've asked Washington for help, but... Trapp's men found three troopers' bodies on the 16th, floating downriver where they'd crossed. They'd been skinned and gutted. Poor bastards.
I'd done some far-handed things, but I could never do what had been done to the body I'd seen in Crofton. Then again, I couldn't have done what was done to those kids. Maybe it was something Powder River does to people, because I could do what I did to Jip Pope, no denying that. Colonel, you people up here are truly puzzling. Carrington stood, walked to the window of his half-finished office, and stared out at the construction workers on the north wall.
Of course, I'm not from around here, Mr. Beatty.
I breathed a little easier hearing him call me Beatty.
I served behind a desk until Powder River. Actually, I'm an attorney by calling. I was sent here to build three forts along Powder River. Washington hired a newspaper man by the name of Edward Taylor to head a peace commission. Rosie Ed, I call him. Can you imagine? A newspaper man. With a stroke of the pen, he convinced them everything was just fine and dandy up here. I even believe it. I brought my wife.
Freedom of the press, I reckon.
Needless to say, she got upset with me when the arrows started flying. As if I could just scold them and send them away. Be lucky if she doesn't leave me on top of everything else going wrong.
Mm-hmm. Women.
Come to find out, Taylor's only treaty was signed by a bunch of small tribes who aren't even from here. Sure, they told him. They wouldn't make war on the Bozeman Trail. So he sent them on their merry way with a wagon load of gifts. They must have laughed themselves silly.
What a bunch of pranksters. I was hoping to lighten the air. It didn't help.
Meanwhile, every warrior who could ride, walk, crawl, or slither has gone up to join Red Cloud for one grand and final bloodletting. And here I am with a handful of green troops and carpenters. I'm supposed to teach them to shoot without killing each other, learn to ride without breaking their necks, and oh, by the way, fight Indians when I find the time. While we build these stupid forts straight through the heart of the Sioux Nation.
Not to change the subject, but if I'm free to go, I believe I might round you up some horses.
They called us Carrington's Carnival because we hauled in 200 wagons full of building material and I brought along an excellent marching band. Carrington's Carnival. Imagine how that looks on my military record. We only just sent our families home last week. What were we thinking? Most of our rifles are old muzzle loaders. They look terrible in a parade. We only have three cannons, and I'm the only one who knows how to fire them.
It must have been a long time since he'd spoken anything but a blue uniform. I sat back and let him ramble.
So here I go. I run over here and shoot the cannon. I run over here and measure a wall. Then over here to rehearse with the marching band. It all seems so ridiculous. I asked for some cavalry, and they sent me Fetterman. He wants to kill anything that moves and have it mounted. Then, now, listen to this. They said that Fetterman wasn't supposed to arrive here officially until November. So rather than cause extra paperwork, I'm not supposed to keep a record of his patrols until he officially gets here.
I don't know what to say.
Try explaining to Red Cloud that all we want is to build forts, to protect travelers along the Bozeman Trail. No one is trying to live here. A few scattered settlers, maybe, but all we want is to cross through here. It's not like we would bother anything. I welcomed him here. I gave him all of them. Coffee, sugar, tobacco. You know, the kinds of things that they like. The things they really enjoy.
But as far as horses...
No. Mr. Big Chief Red Cloud doesn't want us going through his hunting ground.
I mean, if I leave here, I can probably come back with some horses.
He said if he was living in my yard, would giving me a cup of coffee and a cigarette make me want him to stay?
Yeah, I couldn't blame you for wanting to get a bunch of horses and...
I blame Red Cloud altogether. As it turns out, while I was leading my carnival up here, Rosie Ed Taylor and Colonel Maynadier, the so-called Great Peacemaker, were back at Laramie, promising Red Cloud we would stay out of Powder River. How did that make me look?
I made up my mind. If he ever quit rattling on, I was going to ask one more time if I could leave. I was leaving either way. I just hope I could do it legally and strike a deal for the horses at the same time.
He even made a personal remark about my ears.
Your ears?
That's right. He said he could not trust a man with ears as small as mine.
To tell you the truth, Colonel, most of this military strategy talk is way over my head. I'm just a common horse trader, but if you'll give me the go-ahead, I promise you I'll bring you some crack riding horses, somehow, some way. Then you can tell them all to go kiss your ass.
I don't understand.
Well, it's pretty damn clear to me that some high-hatted brass somewhere would just love to see you fail here.
Do you suppose?
Sounds like it to me. Have you pissed anybody off up along the Potomac?
General Cook has never liked me. I've always thought that.
Well, there you are. It's hard to get something done when your boss is always on you.
You know, he's always saying snippy little things in his dispatches. Like, why haven't I been more aggressive? Why don't I send out more patrols? He even hinted once at having me relieved of command. Asked how I felt about Fort Casper. Probably has an old classmate he wants to put here. You wouldn't believe how much of that old West Point glad handing goes on.
Can I leave, Colonel?
Leave?
Yes, leave. I'll get you some horses, but you'll have to let me go.
Go? Go where? Beatty, you've got everybody in Powder River wanting to kill you, including that idiot Bone. I suppose that's why I've enjoyed our conversation. You're the only person I've met in months who has as many problems as I do. Of course, if you think you can really procure us some riding horses, then by all means go. Go with my blessing.
That night, I lodged as a guest of the U.S. Army. In the horse stable near the south wall, Dog, Dirty Jaw, and I pitched our saddles in a row for pillows and wrapped in blankets, not only for warmth, but to keep from swatting flies all night. I'd lain there a while, wondering about Jack, Shad, the Indians, and my stolen horses. Since I'd heard Jack let out the nightbird whistle, I knew they were all right. Finding them could be a whole other thing. After telling Carrington they'd been stolen and my wranglers killed, it would be hard explaining how I got them back. But now I knew that if I could find Jack, selling the horses to the army was a done deal. Ben Bone had screwed things up, but not for long. Now that I had my pistol and rifle back and my Glades knife back in my boot, Ben Bone wasn't going to believe how bad his luck would get. Doug let me know what Colonel Carrington had done with the son of a bitch.
They're keeping Bone in the sick tent. He's tied up tight in a straitjacket and on some heavy drugs. He won't shut up about Miller Crow, Red Cloud, and Black Giants.
I woke next morning to a sound coming from the north wall. A flaming arrow thumped into the ground just inside the barn door. But before I could make a move, Dirty Jaw stomped over from his bedroll, jerked the arrow from the ground, and stuck it in a rain barrel. He stomped out some burning hay from the doorway and walked back to his blanket. The scream came from the north wall and made me jump to my feet.
Think we better get out there?
Dog rolled over, frowned, and rolled back away. Dirty Jaw had rolled back up in his blanket.
Do what you want. We're off today.
I pulled my rifle from the saddle scabbard. A line of soldiers milled outside the mess tent, smoking and waiting for breakfast as if nothing was going on. An arrow stuck in the side of a water barrel. When a thin young private leaned to pull it loose,
"Leave it alone or the damn thing will leak."
"Good morning!"
He stepped toward me with a determined smile. A rolled up set of construction plans stuck from under his arm. Yesterday evening, he seemed lost in the dark irony of his situation. Now, he seemed as spry as a squirrel. I wondered if Jesse, Frank, or anybody back home would believe a word of this. I made up my mind. I wouldn't tell him.
Need some help?
Carrington cupped his chin in his hand, considering my offer. I began thinking he was as crazy as Ben Bone, but in a different way.
How are you with the crosscut saw?
Out there, Colonel. Do you need any help with that bunch?
He waved a hand, dismissing the ruckus behind him.
Oh, that's every day. Means nothing.
Nothing?
I realize how this must look, but I have three forts to build. I may have sounded a little overwrought last night, but I can't let things like this get me down.
From the catwalk atop the wall, soldiers pounded out rounds into the tall grass. At their feet, other soldiers scurried about, measuring, cutting, and driving nails. A measuring stick fell at my feet. I jumped, thinking it was an arrow. Carrington picked it up and pitched it to a soldier on the catwalk.
A little more careful, trooper!
Morning patrol!
A call came from the tower above the main gate.
Oh, good! Here comes Fetterman, who isn't stationed here yet. Bringing in the patrol he hasn't been on.
A horse went crazy as an arrow grazed its rump. It ran bucking, crashed through a hitch rail up on the boardwalk. The rider flew away into a stack of nail kegs. The horse charged through a group of soldiers and into the sick tent.
Oh, damn it!
I could have sworn it was Bone Boys.
Secure that animal!
A lean, swaggering captain jumped from his horse and stomped toward us, slapping dust from his shoulders.
About my getting you some horses!
I wanted out of it, even if it meant riding through the Indians.
Colonel! I need some cavalrymen out here! These lousy foot soldiers are dangerous on a horse! They can't ride without poking each other with them blasted muzzle loaders!
Good morning, Captain Fetterman! I was just going over the drawings for the enlisted men's barracks!
There won't be any enlisted men left if I don't get some cavalry troops here!
Yeah, I know we have some problems in that area!
Problems? Hell, we're going to be burying our problems!
That's a good one!
this is Mr. Beatty. He's the one who killed Jip Pope.
So, you're the one that smacked him with a broadaxe.
Well, the truth
good
is...
Good for you.
Give me 80 good cavalrymen, that's all, and some horses. I mean good riding horses. And I'll put the Sioux Nation out of business. As soon as I get here in November, that is.
Mr. Beatty here is going to talk to you about horses.
I didn't smack Jip Pope with a broadaxe, Captain.
Surely! 80 good men!
Gentlemen! We need to discuss all this in my office. We're distracting the workers out here.
I'd decided to go along with whatever craziness they had in mind until I could get out and find Jack and the horses. As we walked across the parade field to Carrington's office, Fetterman whispered in my ear like he was my friend.
The men all hate him. They call him Little Cannon. Get it? He thinks they're saying it because he's the only one who's had any howitzer training.
Now then, gentlemen, where to start?
Carrington rubbed his hands around on top of his desk as if admiring the polished finish as he took his seat.
We have plenty of wood and hay, so perhaps we won't be sending out work details today or tomorrow. And now that most of the settlers are either dead or chased back to Crofton or Fort Laramie, maybe we can channel our efforts towards building the kind of fort that will last long after we're dead and gone.
Begging the Colonel's pardon, I believe you asked us here to discuss horses.
I could come back later.
No, of course not. I'm simply making small talk. Now then, Mr. Beatty, please tell Captain Fetterman what you have in mind.
I swear, dog, that's what he told Carrington. 80 men and he would put the Sioux Nation out of business. Can you believe that? Dog shook his head and wiped the biscuit around in his plate.
I believe anything anybody says about them. See why I'm leaving? They're all idiots up here. Except Johnson, and he's crazy. Fetterman wants Carrington's job so bad he can taste it. God help him if he ever gets it. He could screw up a steel ball.
We sat on nail kegs inside the barn and ate in the glow of a coal lamp. Rain blew across the fort yard in gray sheets and whipped against the tents. I'd made an agreement with Carrington and Fetterman 3 days ago. I still had to get back to Fetterman to work out the price, but other than that, I could leave any time. When Dog told me he was leaving in a week, I decided I had a better chance of finding Jack shod in the horses with somebody who knew the country. I figured they'd gone with Red Cloud and taken shelter somewhere until Red Cloud was back on his feet. I knew Jack wouldn't turn Red Cloud loose unless they came to some kind of favorable terms. After all, we'd saved his life and the life of his grandson. Where are you from, Dog?
down in the Nations. Signed on for a year, needed the money. Started out in Laramie, that's where I met Jaw. He's on terms with Chief Big Mouth and the Laramie Loafer Sioux. They got me on scouting. But Fort Kearney and the other two forts they're planning are just decoys to distract the Sioux while the Union Pacific lays its tracks to the west.
A spoon more of the elk stew. You really believe that?
No big secret. You think the Army would send these idiots if they really meant to build permanent forts?
They are a different bunch, I'll say that. Dog reached out, poured more stew from the small pot onto his plate, and dipped his biscuit into the steaming gravy.
I think Carrington's here because they ran out of books for him to mark back at Omaha. He's a school teacher, you know.
He told me he'd been a lawyer.
Ex-lawyer, ex-school teacher. I'll tell you one thing. He'll be an ex-officer when Red Cloud's through with him.
I sort of think he's been screwed by somebody. You gotta have somebody pissed off to draw this kind of job.
It's hard to believe they would send him in here with only 5 companies of troops, and they send at least 12 to places like Laramie. Well, there ain't been a shot fired in years.
A young soldier splashed in and stood before us dripping water.
Yeah?
The boy couldn't have been over 16.
I'm supposed to fetch a horse.
They're the big furry things with long tails.
The boy ran back and forth among the stalls.
All I can say is that Powder River is one big test. Maybe the Army ain't sure what they're doing. Maybe they're just figuring what they'll need to do later, once the railroad's finished.
The kid came back leading a red gelding. Hair was missing from around the horse's eyes and mouth.
Don't take him, he's a straw horse.
Huh?
He has a crooked spine. If you ride him very far, he'll fall down from the pressure. He's here to graze around the colonel's house, keeps the grass short.
Dog tied the bald-faced gelding to a barn post and sat back down.
Besides, the government wants this land, but not just yet. They don't know what to do with it yet. But wait till the rails come through. There's gold up the Bozeman Trail. The government needs it bad.
Son, that's a pack mule. The young soldier looked embarrassed as I took the rope and led the mule over beside the gelding. I sat back down and took a biscuit from the platter.
I wonder if Red Cloud sees it that way.
It's his people's land. Cloud's the only person with an honest interest here. That's my horse, boy.
Dog reached out and took the rope from the boy's hand. So he don't see none of it. Dog tied his horse next to the mule and the gelding.
Nope.
Dog looked around at our now crowded area. He moved the pot of stew closer to me and pulled his nail keg away from a swishing tail.
All Cloud sees is that his country's being invaded. The Sioux have been pushed from east of the Black Hills all the way to here. They're just starting to realize that there's really no place for them anywhere. This government's going to push till there's nothing left. So they might as well stop here, where there's still enough game to live on and enough room to fight. The Sioux have to do something. Where else can they go?
The young soldier backed a large Belgian workhorse out of its stall.
I better help him before we run out of room on the hitching post.
The night before we left Fort Kearney, Fetterman had me summoned to his tent. The same dumb boy who came for a horse brought me Fetterman's message.
I'm gonna be a horse soldier. My pa was infantry and his pa before him. Now it's time we step up. I had a fella write me a letter to send home and tell him.
That's good. Always remember, soldiers are the ones with the shorter ears. I just stared at him. We stepped into Fetterman's tent.
That will be all, Private.
The kid disappeared into the rain, still wondering.
So, you really are a horse dealer?
He didn't offer a drink from the bottle of rye on his footlocker. I glanced around it 2 or 3 times. He ignored me.
Well, that's right. Didn't we go over all this the other day?
I wouldn't look toward the bottle again if I died choking of thirst.
Yeah, but I needed time to think things out. You know, most of the money is coming out of mine in Carrington's pocket. I don't suppose I can appeal to your patriotism to go easy with us on the price.
Not a chance, Colonel. It's strictly business to me. This ain't no war to protect the homeland. From what I've seen, this is just the government's idea target practice. Except this time they've stepped in dung and don't know how to get it off their boots.
Yeah, you're not far off there. But I'm thinking about these young soldiers. They'd have a better chance on horseback.
Better chance of what? Breaking their necks before the Indians kill them?
You're funnier than hell.
I saw he was just smoothing me out to cut a good deal for himself. But it wouldn't help him. I was the man with the horses, and he was the man with his nuts in a bear trap.
Let's not mince words. I will pay 150... No. Make that 100 ahead for all the broken trained saddle horses you can bring me.
I looked deep into his eyes, saw madness mixed with a trace of suicide, both brought on by a deep need to outfight a tribe of half-naked Indians who so far had beat him hands down and defied all concepts of military strategy. Reaching out, I picked up the bottle without asking. I will charge 150. No. Make that 200 ahead for 80 horses broken trained.
Where will you get that many horses?
Watch your language. Is it a deal or not?
2 weeks?
Better make it three. I haggled him as if time or deals meant anything in this country. He watched with a whipped look as I lowered the bottle and set it gently back on his footlocker. Fiery amber cut through the dampness in my chest like liquid sunshine.
It's a deal. I hope you know what you're doing. I need them bad and quick.
Well, so much for horses. How much for some soldiers who can ride them?
I get it. You'll cause me to bust a gut.
This was one truly crazy bastard. The next morning, Dog, Dirty Jaw, and I rode slowly out of the fort as a 20-piece military band blasted loud enough to wake the dead. Carrington stood smiling with his hands folded behind him, swaying and tapping his boot. Fetterman gave me a snappy salute, nodded toward Carrington, grinned, and rolled his eyes. Why don't they just hang a target on our backs?
It's not as bad as all that. They're only killing whites.
Well, that's good to hear.
They won't bother you while you're with us.
The Sioux have let whites live here for years with no more trouble than you'd have anywhere else.
But now Washington wants to take over, so they play the Sioux as murderers. If it wasn't for these damn forts, everybody would be getting along. But then we'd be out of a job.
Politics.
Always is. We play it either way.
We turned our horses and headed for Powder River toward the Red Wall. That's where they said you would go to hide a string of horses and a wounded Indian. I didn't mention that the Indian was none other than Red Cloud the Oglala, leader of the Bad Faces Sioux and chief of chiefs over Powder River. I noticed as soon as we left the fort, they got rid of their army shirts and cavalry saddles. Now they rode bare-chested and slung Indian blankets around them against the morning air.
If we need work with the army, we throw on our scouting clothes. If we feel like wintering with the tribes, we take them off.
Just like that? Nobody ever gives you any trouble?
Sure, all the time. Both sides call it the Laramie Loafers.
We're a whole tribe under Chief Big Mouth. They look down on us, but not when they want something done.
It gives us an edge. We get a chance to bend things a little, sometimes. When the army wants to get a few chiefs together and sign another treaty, they send us.
Or if the tribes need to cut a deal for coffee or guns.
Yeah, real slick. So you two see and hear what you want to, like the day at the cave. I know y'all had to see something.
Sure, we saw traces of hooves, but why tell them?
Yeah. It'd been a long day. The last thing I wanted was to fight a bunch of pissed off Sioux.
Hell, Matt Johnson probably saw it himself, but he'd already killed those Sioux kids. He probably figured it was a good day's work.
Jesus, does anything make sense up here?
Nothing I've seen. But think what it would have done to Jaw's chances of joining the Sioux if we tangled with them that night.
You're joining Red Cloud's Bad Faces?
Either them or Standing Bear's bunch. Just a winner. Living with the tribes in winter is miserable. Everything starts smelling like bear grease and dog piss. There's never enough to eat. Soldiers shooting at your ass.
3 days later, we stopped at a path in the deep woods. jaw turned, placed his hand to his chest, and swung it away.
Watch out for your hair, white dog! And you too, Mr. Crow!
Dirty Jaw rode off into the fog-shrouded woodlands. I sat with my arms crossed on the saddle horn. Rain poured, running from my hat brim in a long stream as I nodded my head.
Think he'll be all right?
Sure, he'll hook right up with the Sioux.
Just like that? After serving with the Army?
Cloud needs all the help he can get. Stick a feather in your hat and you could probably join.
It's a big, crazy game up here.
And everybody plays it.
We were many days getting to the Red Wall. We kept out of sight as much as possible, staying in rock shadows by day or traveling the flatlands by night. Much of our time was spent backtracking and slipping out of our trail. I'd nearly come out of my skin when we came upon a party of Cheyenne near a river crossing. They were part of a southern Cheyenne tribe, still neutral, but I had no way of knowing. I thought it a good idea if everyone would wear something on their back saying whose side they were on. They recognized Dog right away. I felt like a greenhorn outsider as I watched them speak Indian and make hand signs among themselves. At times, I could tell they were talking about me, and I watched their eyes real close. Dog's eyes were always steady and deep, the eyes of an honest man. I liked Dog's style. I felt at ease traveling with him. He knew enough to stay alive, a rare gift in Powder River. We shared a camp that night with the Cheyenne. When we woke up 3 hours before daylight, they'd already vanished. We rode away quick and quietly, going over a mile in the direction he told the Cheyenne, then swinging back after making a wide circle through some rocks. 2 hours later, we sat overlooking a wide, sunken valley at the base of Red Wall. I got one more question. We gazed across the valley. It had rained the night before, but come daylight, the sun quickly dried the silver haze. I'd taken off my wet duster and spread it across my lap. Dog smiled and pointed his rifle out across the valley.
Right over there.
He dropped his horse back behind mine as if to help me see better.
There's an opening in the wall beside a big white rock. Just follow the trail around through the canyon. They're in there. They'll find you.
I reined my horse around facing him. Thanks. But that's not what I wanted to ask him. I would sure miss Dog. I thought of asking him along, but I knew it didn't fit his plans. I'd wondered what his plans were in Kearney when he asked me to come along. Now, after watching him talk with the Cheyenne, I answered a question I'd asked myself the first night I'd met him.
What then?
His horse seemed restless. He drew a tight rein.
I was wondering why you waited till we got to this spot.
For what?
To kill me as I ride off.
My smile was firm and certain. Dog shook his head as he eased the rifle barrel slowly in my direction.
How did you figure?
He was still smiling, but his eyes held a look of regret. I watched his barrel move fraction by fraction.
I wonder, the first night we rode into Kearney, nobody asks a man if he's carrying money unless they're thinking about getting it. I wondered more the day you and Jaw told me how you played the Army back and forth. I figured the only way you'd tell me all that was if you knew I wouldn't be around to repeat it.
You're not as stupid as you look.
His eyes glanced at the pistol in my holster. His rifle crept closer. He was wondering if I was fast. I could have told him I wasn't. Never had been. It wouldn't have mattered if I was. I'd already learned not to fire a shot in this land of 1,000 echoes, not unless you wanted to draw everybody within 10 miles. My left hand was on the saddle horn holding the reins. My right hand lay across my lap on the wet duster, a long way from my pistol. He was wondering. I was watching. The funeral drum began to pound in my head.
Money? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I've never met a horse dealer who didn't keep a roll stashed somewhere on him.
He was very calm. He knew he still had the drop, or thought it.
It's in my boots. I never carried anywhere else traveling.
You sure are being a sport.
If you want it, it's yours. You don't have to kill me for it. You can take it and let me ride away.
Again, he watched my hands. Did I have a pistol in the folds of my riding duster on my lap? I raised my right hand slowly and laid it on top of my left on the saddle horn, just to show him I didn't. His hand relaxed slightly. Now I would hear his true intentions.
No, I won't kill you.
His eyes said he meant it. The eyes of an honest man.
They were even deeper and more clear than before. Now his smile spread, opened up, wide and sincere. That's when I knew he was lying. He meant to kill me sure as hell. Which one first? I let my hand drift cautiously toward my right boot. Caught on and stopped me.
No, the left.
I hesitated with a wearied look. Finally, I nodded easy. Okay, left it is. I brought my right hand up and lowered my left. He stared intently. It was like gambling to him. I saw a light come on in his eyes.
No.
This time he was sure. He'd caught my trick. I stopped with a puzzled look. His rifle swung toward me, and he grinned like a sly dog.
Take off the right boot first.
I shook my head and reached down. He glanced up and away for a split second as if congratulating himself. Then his eyes snapped. His whole body jerked once. His eyes held a look of great revelation that turned to confusion, then a startled plea for a second chance. The handle of the Glades knife glistened against his bare chest. A trickle of blood seeped beneath the brass hilt and ran down in a jagged red line. He looked back up at me, his future revealed, then melted down the side of his face. I'm sorry. I truly am. I kneeled beside him and watched the knife handle rise and fall with each fading breath an inch from his heart. He raised a weak hand to his hair.
No, I wouldn't know how, even if I wanted to.
Above the valley, a hawk lay in an updraft suspended in air. Dog stared at it a second through distant eyes. He raised his hand to the knife handle and looked up at me. His eyes were not clear or deep or offering pretense. There was no need for either honesty or deception. We'd become two strangers waiting for a train, each headed in a different direction, each in our silence making our travel plans. He tried to nod his head. I saw what he asked, took a firm grip on the handle, twisted it once, quick, through bone and flesh, a half inch, and his heart stopped. I spent a day riding into the Red Wall, thinking about White Dog, about killing him. By noon, all traces of last night's rain had vanished, and the valley became a furnace. Hot wind whipped up dust devils from within the grass. They danced past me, stinging my face, licking at my clothes, and tangling my horse's mane. It was foolish, the knife trick I'd played with the dog. I should have backshot him as soon as I had a hunch about his intentions. I reckon I was hoping to the end that he would prove me wrong. Either that, or else I was getting as local as every other fool I'd run into lately. I hadn't intended on burying him. I planned to leave him where he fell, same as I'd done others during the war and since. But I'd rummaged through his belongings there on the windy cliff, and afterwards, well, I just figured I owed it to him. I carved layers of sod with my Glades knife. When I'd pulled a spot wide enough and long enough to cover him, I laid him in it, spread his blanket over him, and pressed the sod down good and firm. I carried in a few rocks and laid them over him. That was that. I said no words, for there were none to say. I'd killed him before he could kill me. Among his personals, I'd found an envelope. Inside, there was a lock of black hair tied in a pink ribbon. I figured it was his mother's. With it was a wrinkled letter that had gone yellow from weather and time. He must have carried it everywhere. It wasn't signed, and it was just three words poorly written. "Make us proud," it said. I buried it with him, kept his rifle and ammunition, and turned his horse loose in the wide valley. I followed the advice of the man I'd killed, riding across the valley and bearing left around the red cliffs.
By mid-afternoon, I was deep inside a stone corridor and feeling as if the world was shutting down behind me. My horse's hoofs sounded too loud against rock and hard ground. I tried to ride easy and quiet. I don't know why. There's no worse feeling than being alone after taking a life. There's a silent presence. A spirit pleads as if in obligation to share what's gone on since the moment of death. It's crazy. I have felt it many times. The mind argues with itself and all left around it as if to justify the act.